Hi, I'm Simone Maben, a physician, a graduate of the Air Force Academy, a professional athlete, and a certified personal trainer. This is a podcast about living a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year. The key to living a healthy life year-round, well, one of the keys, is to keep on going on the days that you're not motivated. If I only worked out on the days that I woke up super pumped and ready to go to the gym and super excited, I'd probably work out like twice a week. What really separates my motivation to go to the gym and others is probably just all the negative effects that I feel, the consequences over time. I know what happens when I don't go to the gym, more with my emotions and my feelings, more so than the physical side of things. And so that underlying negative consequence is an indirect motivator on the negative days. But really, what I do at those times is I push through that negative feeling. I push through all those excuses that I'm coming up with at that time to just find my reason and just go. You know, there's a lot of things that you encounter that you don't have control over, and there's nothing you can do about those except push through and find your why. And look at the positive things. If there's light at the end of the tunnel, focus on that. But there's some things that we cause the problem because of some poor decisions we made or an option that didn't seem a poor decision at the time, but you find yourself in a place in which you're unhappy with the choice you made. And you do have control over that, but maybe there's a really strategic way in which you get out of the situation. So you formulate an exit plan. This happened to me when I was a personal trainer at a major gym. And I used to do this part-time. After I would get done working as an officer in the military, I'd leave that job and I'd go work at the gym and work as a personal trainer. And I found out over the next couple months that I just hated it. I hated it. And there's a lot of reasons I hated it. And I'll talk a little bit about that today. It has something to do with that motivation piece. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about that motivation. Second, we're going to talk about working out when you're sick or injured, why you should do it, why you shouldn't. And then finally, I'll talk about organic foods. What does it mean? Is it worth eating it? And help you make some decisions about that. I hope that after you hear this podcast, you'll subscribe to it, like it, favorite it, on whatever listening platform you're using. If you're feeling extra loving, leave me a quick review on the Apple podcast. These opinions do not represent my employer or any associated partnerships. None of my opinions should be considered medical advice. Why didn't I like that job at the gym? I have to tell you, really, it was the obtaining client piece I just didn't like. I was initially excited to get my personal training certification, help people with this new knowledge. Well, I quickly learned you only had clients if you sold them personal training packages. So I suddenly had to learn what concept of sales was. So here I was in these little personal training rooms with the new members. And in this particular gym, if you got a quote unquote free consultation with the personal trainers, we were there to do some basic things I thought were really helpful for everyone, like the height and the weight, general counseling, and then boom, the sales moment. I was horrible at it. I could truly tell people just didn't want to commit the time, the money, or probably anything else to personal training. So it was clear to me, this person just didn't want this stuff. And so I felt uncomfortable convincing them they wanted this. It doesn't make sense to keep going. And that's exactly the point of sales. Like, you're supposed to make them believe. I clearly have no professional training in sales. Clearly. Well, you know, I don't want to follow any loopholes. I will not coax you. I will not trick you. I will not lure you in. You will want this. And that's why I only stayed in that gym for 1 year. It didn't vibe with my personal feelings. I couldn't work with people that needed to be convinced their health was important in such a structured environment and under these timelines and constraints. If I have to convince you your health is important, we're going about this just the wrong way. My job is to educate you so you understand and you believe the basic science I'm giving you, so you want this for yourself. We see this every day in our lives with people battling things they can't get out of their lives themselves? Should it be addiction or unhealthy relationships, unhappy work environments? I mean, if you can't take yourself out of that place of discomfort or kind of overcome this burdensome emotions that are causing you to hold back, then if how can I help you? I mean, you need to do part of that help. A part of a fraction of the work needs to be done by you before anybody can step in. I cannot trick you in believing something you just don't. And that's how this typically would go. It would you would com be convinced, you'd come up mo you show up motivated for session one, then late for session two, late for session three, no show session four, and then boom, you just wasted your money on this package you already purchased, where you committed, all this money to this personal training plan, and you don't even care anymore because you didn't want to do it in the first place. Like, what's the point of that? I mean, there's no point in, for me anyway. I didn't get any pride out of that work. Of course, I was doing this part-time and I had room to be picky because this wasn't my sole source of income. My love is to educate you through knowledge. And I do this through my stories, but I also do this by sharing experiences just through other humans. And that's what I really like to do, is hear other people talk about their story and I learn from them, and I hope you learn from me. And we use those life experiences along with, pure science and motivation to move forward, all combined. And so I want you to use this information to push forward through any struggles that you're having. As much as we don't like to admit it, our struggles aren't that unique. And I'm not discounting your struggles. I'm not saying what happened in your childhood or what your current situation is not difficult. I'm just saying you can't use your life as an excuse. You have to go for it. I'm not afraid to die. I have jumped from a plane 10 times. The first time it was static line by myself, and then 9 times after that, static line by itself. And I have to say, I just did it because I was in it for the adventure for the first time. And after the next couple times, it was just all those great emotions that I got from it. And just to prove the point that I wasn't putting my life at risk and I wasn't just going crazy doing stuff, I looked up some statistics just to kind of drive that point home. And I found that only 24 people died out of 3.3 million jumps in 2014, I think this was reported. That's one in every 133,571 jumps will suffer from fatality. That's if you do some type of jump by yourself. If you were to jump tandem, which means you're underneath the person that's the jump master, you have a 1 in 500,000 chance in dying. That is less chance of dying than getting struck by lightning or getting stung by a bee. And you would never tell me, I'm not going to leave the house today out of fear of getting stung by a bee. So I'm not saying, yeah, you should just plan on jumping out of a plane, especially if it doesn't sound fun to you. What I'm saying is, don't miss out on the emotions of exhilaration, inspiration, moments of gorgeousness and peacefulness because you're scared of death. I wasn't afraid to die because all those emotions overtook that. And then there's a little common sense here, obviously, by the stats. But the point is I'm using this analogy because you just want to take the chance. You have to decide you're going to take the chance and go for it. If you can't tolerate critics, don't do anything new. That's really the number one thing I've learned, traversing some of these battles I have, is that people are going to hate on some of the things you do no matter what. This has to be about you. This has to be about your goals. One thing I keep in the back of my mind, kind of as I go through, or go after my big goals, is that, there's been people out there quick to tell you that you can't do something they've never done themselves. Just let that sit for a while. Why would you listen to somebody that has no experience in the goal you're trying to achieve? And for whatever reason that may be, they have no right to make comment on what you're going to do. I want you to do something because of you. You decide to do it regardless of the risk, regardless of the chance of failure, regardless of the judgment. You have to decide you're going to make a change. You're going to go after something you really wanted. The takeaway is not to wait for someone. Don't lull in status quo. Don't work at a big gym because it sounds good like I did. But go after what you want because you want it. Decide what you want and make a move. One of two things will happen. You'll learn from that move, and it won't be the perfect outcome, or it will be an amazing outcome. You'll advance and you'll keep moving forward. If you like to work out, or if you just started a new workout regimen, one of the most difficult things to do is take a break that's not planned. You know, it's great if you decide you don't want to work out, but when you're sick or if you have an injury and that keeps you from the gym, I can see it's one of the most frustrating things for not only athletes, but for just, health conscious people that like to stay fit, and even more so for people that are just starting a new regimen. Unfortunately, this is a common thing that occurs and we all have to deal with because we're human and injuries occur and sickness occurs and illness occurs. The best thing you can do is decide when to go to the gym still and when not to, because I'll tell you, from my experience, as a physician and then also taking care of athletes and seeing patients with sports injuries, that there's not always the answer is not always to just stay out of the gym. And then if that is the answer, there's always going to be a finite time for that, especially if you're just healing. So I want to provide some guidelines to help you make the decision on when you should take a break from the gym and when you should keep going. So let's talk about being sick first, because that's different than an injury. When you're sick, that's when you're likely affected by some type of virus, most commonly, or bacteria, or let's say all this list of big, unique things that most of us don't get, but let's say some type of GI problem or internal organ issue. Those are all more extreme. And so I'm not going to discuss, complicated diagnoses today. Those kind of fall in a realm of their own. But if we're talking about a common cold from bacteria or virus, then those things are really common and worth addressing today. So the general guideline I like to use is if you have a fever or body aches, that you should probably stay home. And I'm by fever, I mean a true fever. So a temperature of 100.5 would be a real fever. Now, if you have upper respiratory symptoms such as congestion, a cough, you're sneezing, maybe a headache, those are things you can work through as tolerated. So I don't mean you should go and train at the same intensity level. There's actually studies that show that if you train at the same intensity level or even more rigorous, you could decrease your immune system even further. And when you're sick, that's the last thing you want to do. So an altered workout would be appropriate if you don't have fevers and you don't have aches and chills, that type of thing. Now, let's switch over to the injury side of things. I think this area is a little more important to address because it's not as obvious when you should take a break. I think it's pretty easy if you have an injury that you decide to go see a physician for. That's cut and dry. But how many times have all of us had something that we don't go see the physician for? You sprain a wrist, an ankle, your finger hurts, your shoulder hurts, your neck hurts, your back hurts. Most people wait it out, push it out, try home remedies, try stretching. You try conservative, simple things first, and then you go see a doctor. A rule of thumb is if that's persistent, past a couple days to a week, just go get it checked out. There might be some imaging, like an X-ray, that's required. And if it's more, warranted based on your exam, and they need to do more detailed imaging, they'll do that. But if it's short-lasted, there's no reason to go in unless you're having some severe symptoms, such as severe swelling, or you can't put weight down or actually use that affected area. Those would be warning signs you should go in earlier, and obviously stay away from the gym. Now, when we're talking about sprains, which are, the ligaments, little areas that connect, the bones in certain places, sprains can be worked out on. You have to adjust your technique a little bit, maybe. If you have more of a moderate grade spraying, which is more detailed than necessary for the discussion of this podcast. But if you have, let's say, a more severe sprain and you need some type of bracing, likely at this point you should have seen some type of doctor to help decide how long you should wear that and give the right type of brace. Even if it's simple, even if it's over the counter, we do have a lot of patients that come in that try to select their own, and it's usually the wrong type, or there's a better one that we could prescribe. And so you probably could still work out, but maybe with the correct gear to make sure that you don't hurt yourself, or it's just more comfortable until you heal all the way. Now, with that said, it is going to take a longer time to heal, the more strain you put on that if you're not taking a break. If you're a professional athlete where your income is dependent on you working, so not a professional athlete in like what I do, because none of us do this for a living. But if you're a professional athlete in the major sports, those athletes have different injuries they work out with compared to, a person that's just interested in staying healthy. You might need to take a break for a longer bit of time if you're just working out for fun than if, as a professional athlete, you would push through some of these sprains, strains, even fractures. A lot of the athletes work with small, stable fractures. Two common overuse injuries you could work through but would take longer to heal would be a tendonitis or bursitis. These areas are areas that get inflamed from just overusing that area a lot. The best thing to do is to rest it. That doesn't mean you have to stay off of those areas, but it does mean that taking a break can help you heal faster. And at the end of the day, if taking a break gets you back 100%, even if it's for a longer duration of time, you always should opt for that rather than staying at a 70% area for a long period of time, because what that does is potentially lead to other injuries, because now you're compensating other muscles and joints and bones, and now they have to take the burden of the weight of that deficient area. So just think about taking a break at the right time and never, risk anything more than that is worth it just for staying healthy and staying fit in the gym. Take your break when you need it. What's the truth behind organic foods? What does organic even mean? Does anybody really know? I wonder how many people listening to this right now don't even know what organic actually means. Let's talk about it. Let's get into it. I'm interested to hear your questions at the end of this one because there's going to be a lot of information here. So let's go. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture requires three things for a product to have that label on it. One, that product has to be grown and processed organically, has to be made of approved substances on a list they have, and then it has to be USDA verified. Now, the theory behind the organic culture is that you want to preserve natural resources, you're supporting the animal health and their welfare, and you avoid a lot of synthetic materials. But did you know that only 95% of that content has to be organic for it to be labeled organic? So that's the minimum percent required. For something to be labeled 100% organic, which is a separate, unique label, that there's just another tier of requirements for that. So just realize that the label USDA organic means that 95% of the product is organic, not all of it. Now, everything on the list that is used for to make that product cannot be toxic. It can't require synthetic filters, no antibiotics, no growth hormones, no artificial preservatives, no artificial colors, no fake flavors. These foods also can't be around non-organic ingredients. Like both those items can't be combined. If you're going to label it organic, the item that's going to be labeled non-organic can't be, they have to keep be kept separate. So there actually have been a lot of studies done that looked at the micro and macronutrients of the foods to see if there's a difference in foods that are grown and managed organically versus conventionally, which means not following these protocols. And The foods had very similar contents when you looked at the vitamins, the minerals, the carbohydrates. So there wasn't really a difference when you looked at the content of the foods. There's some very general statements you just Google really quick, which I always do just to see what's out there that says organic means it's more nutritional. Well, that's not true if the studies they're doing are showing that there's no true difference in the content of these foods. And so far that they found that even these pesticides that, I mean, that's one thing that I really honed in on when I was first making the decision years ago about what items to buy organic or not, is I was like, oh, all the pesticides they're using, I don't want any of that. Well, you can still use pesticides on organic food. They're just maybe supposed to be safer. But the studies show that even those items are not really convincing that it's m better for the food that you're consuming. And there's still a lot of work to be done on whether or not there's a long-term impact on health. That's not saying there's none. That's not saying there is. It's just saying that there hasn't been proof yet. And so it probably just requires more detailed or better studies to look into that. But right now, there's nothing super convincing. Now, organic does not mean that something is 100% non-GMO. GMO is going to be, food that's genetically altered. So as it was being developed, there was something within the genetic makeup of that food that was altered from how it was naturally made. So these genetically modified organisms really are questionably concerning to some people that want everything to be nice and simple and healthy and whole foods for them. One example is something called polyphenol oxidase. This is what makes apples brown, particularly in the Golden Delicious or Granny Smith type. And scientists were able to turn that gene off that makes the apples brown. That would be considered genetically modified, if you need an example. So some other common examples you might have heard of are corn, soybeans, squash, zucchini, alfalfa, canola, sugar beets, and milk. So those foods typically come from GMO areas. I think like 80 or 85% of corn is GMO. It's interesting because in other parts of the world, GMOs are considered health threats. But here in America, the FDA hasn't said that these things are not safe. And so they're still allowed by the FDA and the Department of Agriculture. So if you want to be sure you're eating non-GMO food, if this is important to you and this sounds like something you want to look further into, look for the label that says non-GMO project certified. These products go through special testing protocols through their production, and it makes that the GMO contamination that can happen didn't take place. So they'll trace the origin of the ingredients and make sure all that's segregated, and then they enforce that the processing is done in accordance with protocol to call it non-GMO project certified, all the way from the preparation to the cooking to the packaging. So, two major takeaways in terms of this topic are you can read the PLU, the price lookup code, and that gives you a quick reference if it doesn't have organic or non-organic sticker on it. If the 5-digit code, if it starts with an 8, it means that it's genetically modified. If it starts with a 9, it's organic. Now, realizing the United States, we're not required to report if something is genetically modified, rather than other countries they do. But if you happen to go to a grocery store and you were to see that 8 versus a 9, that's a nice little tip. Conventional foods or non-organic foods, they'll have a 4-digit code, and that'll typically start with a 3 or 4. So a quick little tip there. Now, in terms of making your decision, I think your goal is going to be dependent upon what your beliefs are. If you personally never want to purchase something that's been altered in a particular way, or you're concerned more about the animal rights and the way things are managed in the processing, and you can also afford to spend the extra money, then you can do that. But just realize that the nutritional benefits may not be what you're hoping for. So I personally buy organic produce due to the taste, which is real. You can taste the difference in some items. Now, I'm particular and I can't just say because something is organic, that means it tastes better. What I'm saying is through the years of trying and experimenting and tasting, I have found items in particular that I can taste the difference that I will only buy organic. So for me, and just my tongue, my little picky tongue, notices the difference in grapefruits, cucumbers, zucchini, sweet potato. I think a few other things. I just notice the difference, and the price difference isn't that big for me that I feel that it's worth just investing in that. So in general, I buy certain organic products due to taste preference, and there's a couple little items here and there. But the one thing I don't believe is buying processed foods that are labeled organic, because organic foods are labeled organic based on the starting place of the foods used to make the food. So crackers, for example, are clearly processed to make a cracker. It's not whole food. So the items used to make the cracker could be considered organic, obviously, but it's still processed foods, and my thoughts and feelings about processed foods being the best option for you to digest or that they're not the best thing. So that's my feeling about that. Hopefully these tips were important and meant something for you, maybe learn something new, and there's just some takeaways for you to make some decisions about organic foods. Thanks for listening to this podcast on how to live a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year. If you have specific questions related to the information in this podcast, you can email me at simone.maben@gmail.com.